This is the big show. It's 8:30. We're not far off being on time. Ish. And this is an apple-free zone. And we've got two people who talk loads of stuff about Mac, and they can't say a damn word about Mac tonight because this is an apple-free zone. Yes.
Should we taunt them?
Yeah, let's do it. Joining us, fantastic bunch. And I've got that bloody red question mark again. I don't know what that is. But while I'm fixing that, Adam from the Maccast,
yes, sir,
can introduce himself.
I got to introduce myself. Hey. I'm Adam from the... I don't know how to say the name of my show without mentioning Apple or Mac.
Yeah, see, got you. How you been, dude?
I've been good.
My roommate at Macworld.
Sir.
Did I mention I'm going to Macworld? I think I might have said that today a couple of times.
Maybe,
just a little
bit. Jeff's become the Riddler.
how's your general knowledge of computing other than Mac?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I think it is.
You know, a lot of people listen to my show regularly probably know this, but I was a Windows C# .NET developer for 5 years.
Okay.
That qualifies you, Adam.
Yeah.
Sarah hates you less now. That's a good thing.
I can write me some .NET. Don't worry. VB.NET. Little MS SQL.
Sarah's got an iPad.
What?
Shut up. Yeah, see, Sarah's got an iPad.
Shut up. What?
The Apple laser's got an iPad. Next, it's Jeffrey Gamet. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, and I'm a rebel, so I'm totally okay saying Adam's from the Maccast, and I'm from the Mac Observer.
Yeah, there we go. Wear your badge and be proud, especially 30 years, mate.
That's a long time.
I bet. Have you got a bumper issue out this week or something? Or
Well, I have my bumper out, but no, wait, that's a euphemism. Never mind.
Good lad. Beneath him, it's Sarah Gray. How you doing, girl?
Incensed.
Yeah, because we found out you got an iPad.
No. That's just a rumor. I don't think there's any evidence that around.
I got a picture of you tapping away on a MacBook, so I wouldn't even dream about starting to call me on that.
Yeah, that was a setup. You know, that was a...
Yeah. You looked like you were set up.
I was drunk, so...
Yeah.
She was young. She was experimenting. It was college.
Yeah, that was Mr. Neighbor setup.
Wasn't me with that sheep. No. Anyway, why are you incensed, girl?
Because of Canada.
Yes, they banned Marmite.
Yeah, I know.
It's a heinous crime.
There again,
Marmite.
I like Canada, so I'm really disappointed.
Well, they always say you either love it or hate it. So the fact that they've been allowing imports recently and now they've stopped them completely says at least they're going with the theory of it. But I got to say, they said it's something to do with additives, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, and it's making me wonder. You know,
well, there's no additives in it.
I know.
It's just raw yeast that comes out from brewing, and then they bottle it and make a fortune.
I know, and considerably better than the Australian alternative.
Yeah.
Say.
Canadians are friendly, my arse. And last but by no means least, they're friendly in Norfolk, but only with the right people. I'm not saying anymore. Paulie boy, how you doing, man?
Hello, mate. Slightly more composed this week.
Good, man. Excellent. Thank you for making the change for last night to this evening. The week in tech, all the big stories, there's loads of stuff going on. Google, as we've gone on air almost, if we'd have gone on air on time, it would have been a hot story, but now it's not. It's half hour old. Google has been blighted. No one knows what's caused it or why, but Twitter just went alive at about quarter past eight, that Google Plus has gone down, Gmail's gone down, there's been people trying to log into all sorts of stuff on the communities and stuff like that, and got nowhere. And what was interesting to me was not the fact that it went down, but, I suppose Google disappearing is a bit of an event, because I've never had anything where it said I couldn't get into stuff before on Google at all. But Twitter just suddenly went alive with, holy shit, Google's down.
Because Google is the internet.
Well, it is. No, exactly. I just, that's what the thing that intrigued me about. How reliant are we on computing? Oh, I can do fine without computing. And then Google goes down and it's like, boof.
Well, yeah, I mean, the search was fine, but it's certainly Google Plus. It's amazing. You know, there was other stuff as well that went down that was Google. So I didn't actually, did anyone actually check to see if Google Drive was affected? That could have been quite serious.
Oh, that would have been an interesting one, yeah. No, I didn't.
Or Google Docs. I mean, people freak out over that too.
Well, Google Plus was the big one. I mean, Google Plus was mentioned as being down.
Nah, no one uses that.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. They do.
Really?
They do. Yeah, absolutely.
Photographers.
Oh, shut up.
Oh. Right. That makes sense.
Who are they?
Google Plus went down and Gmail went down. I mean, Gmail is a big no-no for me. I can't live without Gmail. I mean, it's all my calendars are on there because I don't trust Apple anymore. And Batwitch just put a picture of Paul on the big show.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good.
Why do I do this?
Why do you do it? It's for the ridicule, boy. Yeah. I can't even drag it off and put it on the screen. There we go.
Comes to us all in our time.
There we go. That's Paul.
I'll recreate it, shall I?
I say Paul's had better days. That's end of the week face, that one, definitely. but no, Google Mail going down significant, no? I mean, that's hit everyone, even the Mac boys here. Come on, surely.
Yes. I use Gmail for everything, for all my email.
Maccast@gmail.com, yep.
Yeah, but even my domain emails, because I got grandfathered in on their whole free thing. They would give free storage for your own domain. So I have a few domains that are on Gmail.
Yeah, I mean, I just moved to Google Apps for Business for one of my new businesses. And I didn't actually see if it has been affected, but I'm assuming it must have been.
Yeah, well, it can't not have been.
Well, they're actually going to completely destroy my story tonight by going down tonight, so I'm really pleased.
You start us off, Paul. What's your story, mate?
Well, I was doing a bit of an experiment. It was, well, say it wasn't such a news thing, but Dell have got into the Chromebook market. Oh, great. Mm-hmm. You know, it seemed good at the time doing this, and I did a bit of an experiment this week because Dell released the Chromebook 11, which is obviously Chromebook, which you all know what it is. It's basically an operating system based around the browser. And I did a bit of an experiment this week where, the Dell Chromebook 11 is £159 for a laptop, which isn't bad. And it's mainly aimed at schools or businesses and things like that. And I thought, I do a hell of a lot of stuff in Google or in Chrome. I've got Chrome on my iPad, my iPhone, my Mac, my PC. So this week I installed Windows 8.1 on my laptop, which I don't know if it was a good idea or not, but obviously I've got my MacBook Air, and I built a Chromebook on one of the kind of hacked kind of Chromium OSs. And I kind of I've lived with them for the last week and just seen if I can do everything I need to do in my browser. So obviously I do Twitter, Facebook, things like that. I do my email, Google Docs, all the things like Google Drive, SkyDrive, Dropbox you can do in the browser. I was doing a bit of image editing in a thing called Pixlr, which is a web-based image editor and things like that sort of thing. And I was kind of thinking, you know, Microsoft, there's been a story this week that Microsoft sales went down over Christmas. And I think I kind of talked about a story last week about kind of cheaper tech getting better. And are things like Chrome OS a viable kind of alternative for people who aren't really heavy users? But now I'm kind of thinking, now with it going down today, maybe it's actually not such a good idea. But that was my story. And I have now spent a week doing this, and it's kind of been all destroyed in the last half an hour.
Welcome to the Google fam.
I started on Monday, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I can do it all in the browser. And then, like,
nope.
An hour before I do a story about it, where I've been absolutely fine, it all goes down. So the conclusion is, no, you can't. Discuss.
Well, now the story's taken a bit of a twist. We started off on this idea of Gmail being a bit of a problem and some issues being caused. I literally, immediately, just this very second, TechCrunch is posting that the root of the problem is David S. Peck.
Who's David S. Peck?
It's not a man.
That guy.
Not him again.
You read this, and this is verifiable as well.
David S. Peck,
Gmail glitch is causing thousands, I think thousands probably doesn't cover it, of emails to be sent to one man's Hotmail account. David S. Peck is getting a lot of emails in a glitch apparently related to the massive Gmail outage underway right now. There's an odd bug in Google's search which is pointing users directly to his personal email address. The address appears in a compose window that pops up when you top search results for Gmail. Yes, it's bizarre. It's very, very bizarre. Several of us at TechCrunch have been able to duplicate the bug, first brought to our attention by a tipster. To reproduce the bug, first search for the keyword Gmail on Google.
All right.
Get onto it.
Everybody do it.
Everybody do it. The top search results say Google, Gmail email from Google, and beneath that are two sublinks. One that says email on the left and the other which reads Gmail Google. Yep. Click the one on the left.
Email.
That says email, where the text reads 10 plus gigabytes of storage, less spam and mobile access.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It works.
The Gmail compose email comes up, and it's David's address.
Oh, I'll get him a message now.
I didn't get it.
You didn't get what?
Google possibly have written code that would make this happen.
I think you have to be logged into to Google to
your
Google.
Oh, you have to be signed in.
Yeah.
Well, dude, sign in. It's totally worth it.
Oh God!
I know. It happened to me as well.
I'm gonna send him a picture of that picture of my face.
Oh, I gotta do my. See, I opened Chrome so I could watch the live feed, which I never use, and now I've gotta put. Yeah, I'll get there. Oh, I gotta.
It's not even me too. Jesus Christ.
I'm sending him a message right now.
Do it.
I am.
Here we go, look.
That's inappropriate.
Here we go, David.
Ah, I got a different email address.
Here we go. It's gone.
You're a star, David.
I did it a second time. I got a different email address. I got material at asvd.sasf.ch.
Yeah, I got what Ewan got. The SP, yeah.
Yeah, cool. I did the first time, but the second time.
Oh, this poor guy.
An address. What's going on?
He's going to wake up tomorrow morning.
Oh my God.
I'm going to type my phone number now.
Crazy.
I wonder if he's. It's got to be somebody who's maybe an engineer and it was like a test thing that got rolled forward. I mean, it seems like that would be the kind of likely thing.
Well, it's a Hotmail address. That's the worst.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you could. You sign up for a different email address. You know, as a web developer, I have email addresses all over to send like test email things to when I'm building out stuff.
There's no way Google can offer a valid explanation for this.
The other email address, by the way, is if you click on the right hand link, you get material at asvd.sasf.ch.
Oh, gee.
Which is what? What's the significance of that? Sorry.
Which is probably a spammer.
It's a specific email address, but it's not a Gmail address or anything like that. But it's something in Switzerland.
Ah, okay. So someone's hacked the code then. So I haven't sent an email to David, potentially.
Yes, you do. Material, yes. Sarah's right. There is a different address.
Hopefully this isn't some awful DNS poisoning or something like that going on.
Oh, my life. Well, I've just sent an email saying call in.
I think you're probably getting lots of calls.
Well, I've got. Where's my phone? My phone's on charge. But
I've sent your phone number.
I've sent my phone number. So if it's a hacker, I'm screwed. There we go.
Well, there's a good chance with this that, you know, if this keeps up, Google could take out Outlook.com, I would imagine.
Well, yeah.
That would be funny.
Well, they said apparently that the glitch is caused by Outlook. There was a tweet came out earlier on says the glitch is caused by Outlook. But no, this seriously works. You get David S. Peck's email, dsp559@hotmail.com. And I'd like to say I feel guilty about giving out his email address, but I'm second in the queue.
It's kind of already
I'd be interested
exposed.
To know the other email address must be getting quite a lot as well.
So there is another email address then?
Yeah, if you click on the right-hand link rather than the left-hand link, there's another email address. So they must be getting a fair amount of email as well, I would think.
But anyway, 5 days of research down the tubes because Google's rubbish now, and I thought it might be half decent.
I don't think it is, Paul. I think you've actually illustrated a very interesting point, though, because, you know, can we do it all in the cloud? This is proving, no, we can't.
Yeah.
Oh, now I've just clicked the thing there, and it's asked me to sign in, which makes me very suspicious, but it's got the HTTPS, but because I was signed in to send David his email.
Yeah, I went straight in.
Mark Shepherd sent him an email as well. apparently Hotmail was acting weird this morning.
It's always acting weird, Hotmail.
Yeah, there is that.
Now then, interestingly...
Hotmail doesn't exist anymore, right? Or am I wrong in that? Is it just all Outlook.com?
It does still exist.
Yeah.
I mean, the email addresses still exist, but they didn't do like the Apple kind of thing where...
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you send, it still goes to the Outlook thing, yeah.
Yeah, there's a strange activity on Outlook.com that someone was bleeding using it. Servers went mental. So there you go.
On that whole operating system thing, didn't this week too, HP, aren't they like giving customers credit if they will order a machine with Windows 7 instead of Windows 8?
Yeah,
yes, $150.
Well, that's presumably
because they have to buy it from Microsoft.
Well, they're getting a kickback, presumably, or the price of 7 is less than 8.
Right, so that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm guessing.
They've probably got a load of licenses left over, haven't they? I think that's probably what it is.
So was it BS? Was that just typical BS that was being spun on the web that they're sort of encouraging customers to go with Windows 7 versus Windows 8?
No, HP had a huge banner on the front page of the website saying that you can buy, especially for enterprise and education, that you could buy a laptop or a PC with Windows 7.
So they were promoting it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so oh, they were definitely promoting it.
Yeah, they've always been doing it, but it's only been recently that they've actually kind of, you know, pushed it towards their customers. But yeah, you can do it. But apparently Microsoft aren't very happy about it.
Bloody hell.
And after installing Windows 8.1 on my PC this week, I can see why.
Mark Shepherd in the chat room just made a good point. He said, what if David S. Peck had put an auto response on his email?
I think Google would have taken down the entire internet.
Yeah, you would get sort of in an inverse denial of service attack, wouldn't you?
That's maybe why we didn't get any problems this afternoon. Well, we got loads of problems this afternoon on the Mac show. It wasn't me at all.
it was all David's fault.
Maybe you started all this, Ewan.
Could be.
Blame David.
That's it. Windows 8 has struggled in the market since October 2012's debut, says WinRider, and that became crystal clear this weekend when HP started selling Windows 7 devices on its website. Backed by popular demand, unquote.
I will go back on something that I said maybe a few shows ago. I installed Windows 8.1 on my machine, and I went round the houses to kind of get rid of the Metro interface and installed a couple of apps to kind of get the desktop experience back. But I will say, and people probably go, oh, yeah, you shouldn't say it, but it is bloody stable. The desktop experience in Windows 8.1 is very stable, but everything else, all the other crap they've piled in there, I don't know why they've done it.
I got shouted down last week about the fact that you know, why couldn't you go from the keyboard to touch the screen to go back to the keyboard, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, it's a horrible experience. You don't want to do that. This week I had a go on an Asus because I had such a shitty connection down in London on my 3 dongle that I needed to go and upload something urgently. So I went into one of the offices where my customer is, and there was a young lady there who I've spoken to a couple of times. I said, look, I'm really desperate. Do you have any way of connecting to the net? And she said, yeah, I've brought my own laptop in, and it's just running off my phone, and she was on O2. Gave me the laptop, and I said, oh, is this Windows 8? She said, yeah. And I said, can you get the Metro interface up? So she tapped a button. That's easy. And the Metro interface came up, and I swiped backwards and forwards through the icons just like I would do on my phone. And because I've used the phone, maybe it helps a little bit more. But I was like, okay, I want to start Word. And I dabbed the Word thing, and it came up, and I positioned the icon because it was a touch screen, and I started typing, and then I moved stuff around, went back to the interface using my finger on the screen. It was beautiful. I thought it was absolutely magical. Have you done it, though? That's the question.
Yes, I went in and tried those.
Be any good?
Yeah, my experience with the Metro interface on anything except a smartphone has been painful.
If it's touch, it's good.
It's not the interface. It's just extremely inefficient. I've done it with, you know, an iPad with a keyboard attached. I've done it with a Windows, you know, one of those touch PCs. I think HP had one at the Microsoft store. To me, it's just horribly, horribly inefficient to move from the one plane to the other and back and forth. It doesn't make any sense. There's no need for it, I guess.
Keyboard to mouse is a different plane, is it not?
What?
Keyboard to mouse is moving planes, no?
No. My keyboard and mouse are both on my desk in the same horizontal orientation. If I wanted to move my cursor by a touchscreen, I'd have to take my hands off the keyboard, which is at a horizontal plane, and move them up to my screen, which is a vertical plane. And it's just inefficient. I can just reach over to the left where my mouse is, or if I have a trackpad, even more so, you know, use my thumb or what have you. And it just seems much less movement.
I think it's one of those. I think it's one of those things where you need to be able to do it. You shouldn't be forced to use one or the other. Forced to use the screen. You should be, as Adam says, you should be able to do it with both mouse and touchscreen. Yeah. If you could do both, then if you are doing a lot of typing and you just need the occasional mouse stroke, then you can actually do that quite easily.
It's got to be about choices. Yeah, it's got to be about choices.
Right. Well, and I guess especially using I've tried using the iPad with the keyboard, and I almost prefer the on-screen keyboard, again, for the same exact reason, because on the iPad, you're forced. There is no mouse. There is no control to get around the screen or to touch buttons or do anything from that, you know, keyboard plane that you're working in. So you're constantly doing this back and forth thing, and it drives me batty. It's like, I just want to click OK, and I've got to take my hands completely out of one orientation and reach up, touch the screen, and then go back. It's just driving me nuts.
Chat room's jumping in already. They're saying that I use Windows 8. So this is NitroZip says, I use Windows 8. Don't use Metro. Just the desktop. Works fine with me. Not sure why everyone throws a fit. And Bronwyn says, I agree, NitroZip. I use the Metro interface regularly on a desktop, and I don't really see the big deal.
Apparently there's some talk that with Windows 9, they're bringing back the start menu.
Still get a start menu, can't you, in 8?
Well, no, it's a start button, but the start button does is takes you back to Metro. That's all it is.
Perfect. You know, that's my only issue with it. So there is a way to force, is there a way to force Windows to only run in the desktop mode?
Yeah, there's a setting, because I spent the last night doing it. If you go into the desktop mode and go into the user account settings, there is actually a setting now. It's actually hidden.
Was it added in 8.1?
8.1.
But
it's not as if you install it and it goes, what do you want to do, Metro or desktop? What you have to do is load the desktop, load the accounts, user accounts in control panel, and then there is a setting that says skip Metro and go straight to desktop. It's not very intuitive how to get to it. You have to Google it to find it, but you can go straight to desktop.
Okay. So the question I have is, will it completely then at that point prevent you from going back to Metro? Because that was the thing that I think a lot of people are mostly responding to, is that Metro, at least in 8, I haven't tried 8.1, is totally forced upon you. And you're constantly, again, having to move back and forth between these two very different experiences. And especially if you're just using it on a keyboard or mouse and not on a device that has a touchscreen, Metro makes no sense whatsoever.
Only on a touch device did it make any sense, because we've got Surface, obviously the Surface 2 at work now. And yeah, it works really well as a tablet. It's a bit too long as a tablet. But the confusing thing is, when you dock it, you suddenly get a mouse cursor as well, which is really confusing.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people who had Windows 8, and where I work, we've now actually decided that we're actually going to skip Windows 8 completely now.
Yeah, being thrust back and forth was what put me off the most, was just being forced to go between one or the other, and I felt like I had, you know, like bipolar disorder or something like that.
It's two operating systems in one. It's just...
And that's a problem. Microsoft tried to make an operating system that's one OS for everything. And so they had to make compromises across the board. And it's, I think it works great on a smartphone. But when you move away from a smartphone, just the whole breaking the planes and when are you using a keyboard and when are you using a mouse and when are you touching, and it just, I don't think it scales well at all. I think that whole interface should stay on the smartphone, and then they need something else for their desktop and laptop market.
I think the one thing that I've had a bit of a lesson this week is my Apple mouse. I use it a lot in editing, and I use the flick to go backwards and forwards through timeline in Final Cut Pro. And I lost a mouse this week, so I got out an old Target mouse. Here we go. £13 off eBay, or off Amazon, rather. Beautiful little mouse. I enjoy it immensely. It's big, so it fits nicely in my big palms. And I've been using that instead. Wired connection, so it's super fast, doesn't go glitchy, doesn't drop connection or anything like that. But trust me, if you want to scroll left and right in Final Cut, it's a pain in the arse. And it's that made me think about maybe the Metro interface would be good. Maybe a touch interface would be good, where I can scroll backwards and forwards through things like timelines, would make a lot of sense. And I would have reached up and done it quite happily, and I wouldn't have complained. Because I wanted to complain less about reaching up and touching the screen to go through a timeline than I would have complained about having to hit shift and use the roll wheel to try and get going through it manually. Yeah. So I think the one thing that you can say is that Windows doesn't have anything like the magic mouse that works in the same way. So that might be an impetus towards why they didn't. I don't think it is horrific at all. I've used it this week now, and I
just think it's an efficiency thing, though. If you've ever watched somebody who's like a keyboard wizard, and you know, even like video editors, when they have those special keyboards on the shuffle jog, the jog wheels and everything like that, I've seen those guys and they can fly.
Yeah, but you've got to learn the shortcuts. And you've got to learn the keyboard shortcuts.
Of course, yes, you do. But once you know the shortcuts, the most efficient way we have today to navigate a computer is through a keyboard, not through any sort of pointing device. Yeah. It's all through using a keyboard.
I used to.
Well, and you can also be very efficient on a touchscreen if you're staying on the touchscreen, I think. You know, like on my iPad, I can, you know, fly through things. But again, there's that. It's we're talking about a very small delay, and I'm really nitpicking here.
But I think you're right, Adam. I think there is an annoyance about doing that. I mean, I was going to make the point about, you know, on my tablet. You know, I do fly around, and you know, I'm jumping around, and because I'm not using an iPad, I've got multiple applications open at the same time, you know, which is great, and I'm jumping between them quite happily, and I'm very efficient. But what I really object to is being forced to have to change. And you know, when when I have used my Bluetooth, I've got a Bluetooth keyboard that I use when I'm doing, particularly when I do show notes and things like that. And it is a real pain having to do that. And I object to being forced, to do that if I was using Windows 8, which is why I'm not really even consider using it.
No, I mean, I agree with Jeff. If you're talking about the, I do Final Cut, and a lot of my time, I mean, the difference between Control A, Control Z, Control C, Control V, Control B for doing changes to the, or just A and B to hit, to get the tool up. So you've got to do that. The reason I did that is I'm going back 15 years maybe, and I used to work with an old guy that was a whiz on AutoCAD, and I said, "God, Steve, you're really good with the command shortcuts and stuff on the keyboard." And he went, "If you don't know the shortcuts, you're a wanker."
he's right, and he is
completely right. And see, I'm so it's partially because I'm so jealous of people who can do that, because I can never remember the dang keyboard shortcuts. So
I learned all the usual shortcuts from using WordStar years ago, when it was the only way to actually navigate.
That's the only way to do it.
And you know, when in that situation, you just know them. You know, I don't use a mouse to copy and paste. I always use the keyboard.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You know, when I see a user at work. I'm sitting there just doing it all on the keyboard, and they're like, "What's that? What's Control C? What's Control V? What's Control X? What's Control Z?" And
holy
they're like,
shit.
Some people just actually don't know what those things are.
My mother's 80 years old, and she knows Control C.
But yeah, but talking about the touch interface, there is some sort of, you know, validity to that, because if I'm doing the notes for this show, I'm on my MacBook Air, and I've got a full screen browser open, and I've got Evernote open, and I'm using like the four finger swipe to go between the two apps. And that works really well, because I can swipe, grab a link, copy it, swipe back, post it into Evernote. So, you know, that kind of works, but I've got a real problem of sticking my finger out, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Toby in the chat room is trying very hard to defend Microsoft. Not doing particularly well, it has to be said. Vista is fine now after all the service packs. It was dreadful on launch, but now they've largely fixed it.
Largely.
Largely.
I say cheers to Toby.
I never had a problem with Vista. I have to say, I used it just fine when I had to use it. So, and I thought it was great on file handling. Significantly better than OS X. Right. Adam, what did you bring for us as a story, mate?
Now, mine ends up being a little more on the geek side than the technology side, but I think a lot of people would be able to relate. And it's an anniversary that's happening this weekend. And it's not... I'm avoiding the taboo topic, because this time around it's D&D turning 40. Dungeons and Dragons.
Really?
Yes, sir. And it's a little debatable. I'll grab you the link to the article. The timeline's a little debatable, but I guess Gary Gygax. I always wonder if I mutilate his name. Gygax, I think, is. Posted a letter and said it was going to be released January 1974. So,
Jesus Christ.
I thought it was older than that.
No, according to this publication, 1974 original, D&D basic set first revision was issued in 77.
Wow.
I can't believe that's 40 years ago. Shit, I'm old.
Wow.
So I'm assuming I'm not the only one here who played.
I never got into Dungeons. I watched the movie, but I never got into Dungeons and Dragons.
I never got into it, but I used to work with somebody who played it, and it wasn't. I always thought it was until then. I always thought it was a computer game, but he explained to me it's so much more than just that. And it was around way before it was a computer game, apparently. So I'm told.
Yeah, yeah.
Cartoon over here, wasn't it?
Oh, that came
was a cartoon.
There was a D&D cartoon.
Yeah, in the 80s, I think, early 80s.
Where's the cartoon come out? Doesn't say. I'm having a look.
It was awful.
Oh, no, I love that cartoon.
I did too, but go back and look. It was awful. There were a lot of those awful cartoons at that time. You know, just really rushed out. You know, the animation's kind of real jaggy and...
You know, there's a system named after it as well. A game-playing system.
Yeah.
Yep. D20 system. It's a role-playing game system published in 2000 by Wizards of the Coast, originally developed for the third edition of Dungeons & Dragons. The system is named after the iconic 20-sided dice, which are central to the core mechanism of actions in the game, which are all here.
Wizards of the Coast messed up the whole game, from what I understand. I haven't played in years, but there's a huge faction. They came out with 4.0, which was meant to be more sort of tailored to the video game age, I guess, and the internet and sort of changes in time in terms of how the gameplay works. I'm not sure all the specifics, because I'm not that close to following D&D anymore. Maybe folks in the chat room can mention it, or we might hear from people. But there's another now thing called Pathfinder, and that's supposed to be closer to the D&D 3.5 rules, I guess, and more attuned to what you know, the sort of the game that I played when I was a kid.
There's a bit here from the Wikipedia article that says, when gaming company The Valor Project, under former Wizard of the Coast brand manager Anthony Valaterra, attempted to publish the D20 Book of Erotic Fantasy, which focused on sexual content, Wizards of the Coast altered the D20 system trademark in license to create and add brackets, quality standards, close quotes.
Is that the open, and is that they kind of open sourced part of the D&D stuff, which is like why I think the Pathfinder thing exists. Again, I don't follow this stuff that closely, but I have a local game store that I really like, and I kind of asked about this because I was wondering what was going on, and they tried to explain it to me the best they could.
Well, there's still Dungeons and Dragons stuff out there in gaming stores. Games Workshop was a very big store over here. I don't know if it's still got the same kind of following as it used to have, but that was huge. And we went on holiday 2 years ago in Wales, and there was a guy there had a model store, in quotes, and we were in there thinking they might have some remote control models, and actually all he had was the Dungeons and Dragons. And what's the one that's big at the moment that's... Space Rangers-y type.
Is that Warhammer?
Warhammer. We got loads of Warhammer and stuff, which was all owes its existence to D&D, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah.
40 years. Shit, wow. I'm old.
Yeah, and there's guys still in their mom's basements.
Ha!
40 years later.
That's a great story, mate. But that January 74 original publication of Dungeons and Dragons. Well, this story is this show has never talked about Dungeons and Dragons ever before.
So there's a first.
You've come on, Adam. Not only you brought a great story, but you brought a first. Space Marines, says Batwench. Well done, you geek.
Oh, there, that was, yeah.
Games Workshop is still going, she says.
Huh.
Dear God, that video was awful. Says Jeff, but I don't know what that video was about. The Dice Shop Online.
Yeah, Batwench found me a video so I could see part of one of the Dungeons and Dragons cartoons from the 80s. It's really, really bad.
No, it was like Legend of Grayskull, wasn't it? The He-Man thing. It was that kind of esque type animation.
Yes. Yeah,
He-Man was better, I think.
Well, He-Man had storylines.
But yeah, same kind of, it's that same 80s kind of, you know, really low frame rate animation that they could just crank out, you know, super fast.
He-Man had morals at the end.
Well, he had the power as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he had the power of Grayskull.
I have the power! That was it. I watched too much of that. Can't you tell? I'm gonna put Echo on that on the finished product.
I was more awesome. Thundercats guy.
Now see, Thundercats was Bollocks. A lot of fun.
Do you remember G-Force? Did you guys get G-Force?
Oh, I loved G-Force.
I used to watch G-Force during the school holidays when we were off in the summer term. We used to just break up, and then you could guarantee 9:20 every morning they'd show an episode of G-Force just before they showed Whirlybirds. And you cannot beat Whirlybirds, I'm telling you.
Also Voltron.
That and Casey Jones.
Oh, I'm with Adam on Voltron.
I thought G-Force was the film about guinea pigs.
No, G-Force G-Force was quality because it was like I would go so far as to say it was the kind of precursor to Power Rangers a little bit, where they all had their own special thing and they all joined up in a special plane and it was a Japanese anime type thing and it was brilliant. And I want the complete. If anyone wants to buy me a birthday present in August and we don't know what it is.
All right, so I'm going with the whole virtual reality thing, and so Oculus Rift, that's you know, one of the the popular VR setups. There's this group that's taken Oculus Rift and figured out how to use it so people can swap bodies, in a manner of speaking, and they designed it so that a man and a woman could see what the world looks like from the other person's perspective. And so the way it works is you have two people in a room, they each put on the VR headsets. And so now they're seeing what the other person is seeing and they can, do whatever they feel comfortable with. So yeah. So when one person does something, the other person mirrors the motion. So you can undress the other person and see what it would look like to undress yourself if you're the other side.
But then where'd you go? That's it. Once you've done that, what's left?
I'll just be looking
down. This sounds very bad.
The corporation is allowed.
It's an interesting idea, and for some people, I'm certain it will be very. It's something that would be very uncomfortable for them, but for other people, I can see where this would actually be kind of fascinating. And then there will be another group where it's like, woohoo, personal porn.
I've got to say, I'm ashamed of myself because I've just gone to the Oculus Rift thing and there's a link for it for the news and it's taken me to the frigging Daily Mail website and I would never go to the frigging Daily Mail website.
Oh, well, never mind.
Although there is a woman there who's topless, so it's not the end of the world.
So at least there's that. Yeah, so anyhow, there's a video with the article that I found at Gizmodo about this. And it's... And so they show people just kind of exploring each other's bodies through this VR thing, and it gives them an idea of what it would look like to perceive other people as if they were.
At that point, aren't you in essence having sex with yourself? Really, who wants to?
I don't think it was having sex. I think it's...
No, masturbation is very popular.
Well, there's that.
Yeah, and anyone who says it's not popular is lying. there's two users here, and there's a guy who's obviously got his partner's view perspective, and all he's done is he's looked down at his own tits, which he hasn't got, of course. So that's
yes, and spoiler for people that haven't seen all the way to the end of the video, there's a woman that pulls out her underpants. So the guy has to pull his out so she can look down and see his junk.
Hey, good girl.
What's the time frame on that one?
We like equality.
That's right at the end.
There's a Zoom function, take it then.
I would certainly hope so.
You hope so? There's a show.
Did it get hot in here? Hold on, I better check up.
You've got a pair of these. You've totally done it.
You know, I would do it.
I would, Jesus.
For science, absolutely.
I don't think you need a set of Oculus Rift stuff. I mean, I think there's probably websites on the net that would do this for you. So,
yeah, but with this, you actually have the other person in the room.
Okay. Well, so why wouldn't you just take it off and just do the thing with the other person in the room?
Well, because you get it from their perspective. I mean, that's the whole thing, yeah, right? Seeing what they're seeing, they're seeing what you're seeing.
Dude, yeah. I'm 6'5" tall. I can stand behind anybody and get their perspective, so...
But for those of us that aren't quite as tall as you, Ewan.
The show title apparently is Masturbation is Very Popular. In the continuing set of titles which are not getting a sponsorship. Thank you for that. We appreciate it, Bromwyn.
You're not finding the right sponsors.
Oh, it's not Bromwyn, it's Bookery.
You need like Durex and... Trojan
and Summers,
and you'll be fine.
And Oculus Rift.
We get Chat Roulette to sponsor us.
Chat Roulette. There you go. Well, we have enough cocks on here, so. You fed me that line. You fed me that line. That's not a natural reflection on the guests on this show or the quality of the guests on this show. It was just a line that Paul fed me. We pre-rehearsed it. That was.
Going to ask if you were a double act.
Oh shit.
Something anyway.
All right, so what we've just established is that Ewan is buying all of us beers at Macworld.
That was going to happen anyway, whether I called you a cock or not. So, no one can ever tell me I don't buy my round. At least.
True.
And I will be bringing a few games out that we need to play if we go out drinking.
Nah, that won't happen.
Yeah, it will.
I don't know. Adam, do you recall any of us ever going out drinking at Macworld?
No.
I've got one that's very special for the first night out. You'll love it.
Sounds like you're going to be a fish out of water, Ewan. They're all sensible and they don't go out drinking when they go there.
Yeah, right. The fish part may be out, but nothing else. Sarah, what story have you brought for us? Good story, Jeff, by the way.
Well, I was going to talk about Canada and Marmite, but I didn't think that would be particularly...
It's not really tech, is it? No.
No, it's not, so I thought maybe I'd...
Mine wasn't tech either.
You mean I can't go with the Marmite story?
just to finish off the Jeff story, the last word goes to Toby Pinder, who said, I do believe that the field of this study is called teledildonics, and it's a growing sector. Very good, mate. Very good.
What? Teledildonics.
Oh, got Sarah to say it.
That's okay, a real thing.
Sarah, tele referring to communication. Dildonics referring to dildos. And
that's what it was, yeah.
Okay.
See what she did there, Jeff? See what you did there? Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Okay, Sarah, what story did you bring? For God's sake, save us.
You mean I can't talk about Marmite?
No. It's not that, tech. I mean, it's not tech.
I know, but it kind of swamped anything else I come up with. Mine is pretty boring, but I saw this story and I thought, bloody hell, the implications of that are pretty horrendous. There's a story. There's loads of credit card theft stories this week and all sorts of things going on. USB sticks being used to raid ATM machines and things like that. And but amongst all that, there's a story that nearly half of the population in South Korea have had their credit card details stolen by a contractor sticking all the information on a USB stick and walking out with it. Nearly half of the population in South Korea. It's like 20 million credit card details. Lots of credit card details have been stolen.
Good God.
I know. And I was just thinking, if you sort of took that up and multiplied that up, either in the US or the UK, apparently he just walked out with it and sold it to marketing companies. It was just like unbelievable. But one thing when I was looking at the story, and I noticed there was another story there as well. And apparently the FBI in the US are warning retailers to be out on the lookout for viruses that are now installed on credit and debit cards that are used to infect machines when they're actually used to swipe to buy something. I just thought, this is just taking it to another level. We used to viruses on, Windows PCs and other machines and things like that, but this is just ridiculous.
Mark Shepherd in the chat room saying, don't forget all ATM machines tend to run on Windows XP. So
yeah, well, 95% of ATM machines in the US are running Windows XP, which hasn't been supported or patched or anything, I think,
I'll be bringing cash with me then.
Apparently, on that particular story, I understand that a lot of the ATM machines and things like that are using Windows XP embedded, which, although XP is due to come out of support, I think it's the end of March or early April. I understand the embedded version is Microsoft are providing support through to 2016. So that's not going to be a major issue just yet, although obviously, you know, the vendor machines and reading information out.
The Big Show. And he came on to talk about an instance that had happened with him and his wife, but forgot to talk about it, unfortunately. But basically, his wife's account got emptied by someone in Indonesia, and they took $4,500 out of it. Now, the problem was...
Ouch.
A hell of a tip.
He's got the cleanest windows in Scotland.
For the next 50 years.
I was just going to say, he's going to have his windows clean quite happily for the next few years.
He's tried to chase what was the problem, whether it was clicking on an email or anything like that, and he can't figure out what's caused it. There is no idea how they've got the details, but they definitely have the details, and they definitely took malicious action.
It's got to be a keylogger, hasn't it?
I don't know. I mean, it's running Macs throughout the whole house. They all run Macs, so it's not a Mac virus, certainly, because he's on top of that, so...
But who knows? I mean, if they're able to put viruses on credit cards these days.
Well, the only thing that bothers me is I'm running Sophos, and if you've got a Mac, even if you are, you sit there and you think, oh, well, it's Mac, you know, I'm safe. There's nothing out there that can really hit me. And yeah, to a certain degree, there isn't really, but that's a... it doesn't take a lot of cycles. Go to Sophos. It's a free service. They are not selling you a package, and it really doesn't hog your computer. And it's free for all Mac users. So run that. You will not exist with immunity. And now I get this thing catches. Every day I'll get at least three emails that's got a zip file in it or a doc file that it flags it and it goes, whoop, there's a Windows virus in here. We're just going to quarantine it anyway, even though it can't do you any harm. But that's going to my Windows phone as well as...
Yeah. So you're sure it's not the kind of skimming sort of thing that happened?
No, pretty sure. They said they're pretty sure it wasn't. So,
Do they still have USB dead drops? Is that still a thing? That was an interesting trend for a little while. Did you guys have those over there?
So people
would go around and embed USB sticks in like walls or just public spaces. And the idea was you were supposed to just walk up and stick your device, you know, your laptop and connect to this thing and find out what was on it.
Oh, no.
And it infects the machine that way, yeah.
No, I mean, in some cases it was artists doing it and it was art installations and you'd get, you know, photos or whatever. But it was just one of these weird things. Oh. You'd walk down the street and, hey, there's a USB connector sticking out of a brick wall.
I can't imagine why people would really, really use those, but they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then in terms of security, I bought a new debit card the other day and it came with the little Wi-Fi thing on it. So it's obviously one of these contactless payment things. And I went to the bar a week ago, the first time I tried it, and you literally just, I never tried it. You just wave your card in front of the thing and it takes your money, doesn't it?
Mm.
Where's the security in that?
I know.
Well, there isn't any. The touch and go stuff is horrific.
Yeah, because I normally I'm a chip and pin kind of guy, all cash, generally in a pub on cash, because I'll set myself a limit. And when the cash is gone, I'm too drunk to kind of put a PIN number in anyway. But I thought
that's really smart.
And it said, you know, tap your card. And it went, you know, 7 pound 80 gone. And I was like, well, where's the flipping security in that?
The thing that worries me about that, Paul, is how long is it going to be before somebody actually creates a device, walks through a busy pub with a device that moves rather than the card that moves?
They
already
have
people's handbags and is, you know,
doesn't work.
Wallets and stuff, or just touching. It could be just touching them, you know, brushing past them, and it's taking money out of their card.
Doesn't work, mate. And the reason it doesn't work is it gets more conflicting signals. So if you've got 3 or 4 cards with chip and pin on them, when you go past and you dab on it, it gets too many conflicting messages and it won't read it. So yeah, I've tried it with mine, just picking up my wallet and just dopping it on the thing and seeing what was selected. And it went, gave a message, but basically it said there's too many messages here to deal with. So
is it like an Oyster card where you actually have to physically touch it on the reader?
Yeah.
There's no security, because me and Ewan can be down the pub and I can go at the bar and I'll buy this brand. Ewan can tap my card on the thing and pay. No one's going to know it's not his card, are they? Where the hell's the security? So
that's
this
true, yeah.
thing is...
Well, credit cards don't have security on purpose, and it's to make them easy for us to use. It's a very conscious decision on the parts of banks and credit card companies.
Oh, we have PIN, though, don't forget, Jeff, which you guys don't.
US is one of the only few countries in the world now that doesn't have chip and PIN.
That's a really good point. So it's even less secure here.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm glad I don't live in the US.
Yeah, but my is circumvented by the contactless payment, isn't it?
I must admit, when I was in the US a couple of years ago, I was quite surprised that there were, because I thought that I wouldn't be using that at all, but there were a few stores I was in where they did actually have chip and PIN. I was quite surprised.
A common attack vector over here is they use the gas pumps and they modify the readers on there, or they put a device just on the outside that they stick.
Yeah, we've had that.
That has like wireless, or in this case, even more sophisticated, like cellular. And so you put your card in to pay, it still pays like normal, but it grabs all the information and then we'll just text it, you know, to an attacker.
Yeah, we have to put them on ATM machines over here.
Skimmings. I always, when I go up to a cash machine at gas stations and stuff, I always wobble the casing and pull it off the wall.
I generally try to use ATMs inside a bank or whatever rather than the ones outside if possible.
Yeah, but when I had my last card, it wasn't contactless. So if anyone had used my card, they'd have to type my 4-digit PIN number. But now if someone stole my card, they could walk in anywhere. If they've got contactless payment, tap it and they're away.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like cash.
You know, here's the thing, though, is that all those methods are still really technical and really tricky and really expensive. Whereas, you know, the big stories recently are these guys that got into places like Target, you know, through back doors, which is much easier, and you can skim and grab a lot more numbers. And so what most people really don't realize is that where the failure is not necessarily in the technology that's doing the capture and transmission of this stuff. That's pretty locked down for the most part. It's how people are handling the data after they get it where the big holes are and the big problems are. So, you know, it's, we can talk about this stuff all day, and yes, it's all technically possible, but it's a lot harder. It's much easier to go in to, you know, in, get inside Target and get access, get at their database some way through a virus, through, you know, going through some employee, whatever it is, you know, paying them off. There's a lot easier ways to get access to a lot more data, because like, these guys are just willy-nilly with it. I mean, that's like, where the problem is.
Like we've seen with the guy in South Korea that's walked off with 20 million, he just, from an because it was an inside job.
Yeah.
Batwench in the chat room says, I find driving into gas stations costs a lot in tyres, because she's actually driven into the hard standing of a gas pump this week and blown a tyre.
No.
So I do apologise. Has anyone noticed, I've only just noticed this, has anyone noticed that FaceTime has no reflection on a Mac on the dock?
What do you mean reflection?
Well, yeah.
FaceTime is vampire. It's Nosferatu. It is. Look, FaceTime is Nosferatu. It is absolutely vampiric. There
you're
you go.
Right.
It's got no reflection. Huh. It's the only icon on the whole of the dock that has no reflection. So there you go. You heard it here first on a show that doesn't do Mac. Sorry, I've only just noticed that.
You know why? You know why?
Why?
Its base sits higher than the other apps. Look at Mail. Mail barely has a reflection.
No, it's vampiric.
But it sits lower.
Oh, you're right.
It is vampire. It is Nosferatu.
I want to point out that Ewan's talking about the Mac.
No, I wasn't.
You broke the own your own rule.
My story. Yeah. Have I done everyone's story? Yeah. We've done it. My story is, it doesn't need discussion, really. It's just a kind of a bit of a gloat, really, to be honest. There's a survey released. Lies, damn lies and statistics and all that, I grant you, that's fair enough. But this is a proper story with proper studies, with proper empirical evidence that's been gleaned from the internet. And it says the British are the world champions at watching porn on the net.
I could have told you that.
Apparently, we like our porn long. And that's in terms of, like, length of watching, I'd just like to point out.
Oh, okay. Okay. Clarification was important there.
Yes, I agree.
And apparently, we like British porn quite a lot, which I've had an email that says this show's as bad as watching British porn, which isn't true. And they like Lisa Ann.
Like a cup of tea with your happy ending. What's the difference between British porn?
How do you know about happy endings, Jeffrey?
A friend told me.
And they all lived happily ever after. There we go.
Exactly.
No, apparently.
Why do you have a picture of someone's knees up?
Yes, that's right.
Who's Lisa Ann?
In a holder. Well, no, here's the thing, because I've Googled Lisa Ann. Apparently, Lisa Ann looks like, who's the dozy bitch from Alaska?
Oh.
Don't ask me.
He's talking about Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin, there we go. And apparently she did a porn movie dressed as Sarah Palin called Nailing Palin. But she is rather hot, I've got to say.
Oh, come on.
She's got a couple of balloons stuffed up her shirt, it has to be said, but yeah, but she's apparently hot for Brits. Brits love her. She's great. And here's the map. And I'd just like to point out that little blob there that's at the bottom in London is not when I'm visiting. Okay? that's where I live, right there. Look, see? Yeah. Now, Liverpool, Manchester, Leeds, all of those places. Big Norwich, dude.
Hey!
Norwich, here you go, look, see?
Busted.
I haven't got anything for American, unfortunately, because it's a British survey. But apparently, this is the visit duration. So this is as long as you're at Pornhub. And London stays for up to 10 minutes. Huzzah!
Now, is that watching just the British porn, or are they rolling in the Palin porn?
That's watching Lisa
Palin
Ann.
Porn market. Oh, my God.
That's watching Lisa Ann doing a Dick Van Dyke-like European accent. Whilst pretending to be Sarah Palin. There we go.
Oh, bloody.
I just thought that was cool. there also is a breakdown of towns, and it would seem that the West Sussex village of Billinghurst appears to have the most staying power. If
it's
you live
one dude.
And apparently, regular visits will last longer than 8 minutes 41 seconds over 5.6 pages of videos. There you go. And where in Hertfordshire, with a population of 18,000, is the outliner on the end of the scale, where they go for up to 10 minutes 37 seconds. They didn't put the shortest, though, unfortunately.
Well, that was a professional courtesy.
Yeah, apparently it's quite a common thing for porn users to stick to their own, and excuse the pun, in their 2013 roundup uncovered here in The Guardian, Pornhub found that porn aficionados in countries including Germany, France, Italy, Spain, Japan, Mexico and Brazil were also searching for their own nationality before they searched for anything that was US. There you go. The Brits. Stay in power. We had an empire once. Now all we've got is a reputation. Apparently, if you're
world champs at something.
Exactly. If you can go to billingshurst-community.org.uk, there's a club there where you can join up and you can sit with all the other wankers.
Not so basically, if I ever need to get the lid off of a jar, when the lid's stuck, just hand it to a Brit and they'll be able to pop that right open for me.
In 10 minutes.
In 10 minutes. I'll be patient.
You better not be hungry. Why is there always porn on this show, says Mark Shepherd?
Yeah, but
because proof of the survey.
Just, hey, what?
It's a British show, right? And we're talking about...
British. Well, I just thought I was proud. I was proud there for a minute.
Can you explain why there's always porn on this show?
Yeah, no, we I did.
There's the word sex in Sussex, so maybe that's what it is.
No, I did explain on the Mac show today that we lost the biggest ever possible advertising contract we were ever going to get from Asda, which is like Walmart here in the UK, because Will Green bought up Hans Moretti on the Mac show, and we published Debbie McGee's Five of Spades, which was quite possibly the most inappropriate podcast we've ever produced. It's still on the server if you can find it. It's in there. We got a letter from them afterwards, having gone through all this big proposal of having to get some sponsorship, and they wrote to us almost immediately after that episode saying, I think we need to move on.
Wow. That must have been stunningly inappropriate, because I've been on many shows on this network that probably qualify as shockingly inappropriate.
You just got to find the right, fit, the right sponsor.
Debbie Sarah, can we find a link for Debbie McGee's Five of Spades on the server? Is it on there? I think the episode is still on the server.
Probably.
If you can find it. Max Show, Debbie McGee's Five of Spades. Search for it. See if it comes up. But that lost us a contract with Asda. That very show. And I got a thing from Don McAllister saying, don't you think you should just tone it down a bit and then, you know, maybe you'd get some sponsors? I'm like, no. If they can't sponsor us for who we are, then I'm not going to change who we are.
You need liquor.
This is us.
Sponsors.
You need
clubs.
Yeah, we might be a little
saucy
too,
apps.
We might be too far for even them, mate. This podcast and all this is brought to you by UK2. Now, they're a sponsor who stuck with us for 5 years through all of the crap that we've ever done. And they still keep coming back. They love us to bits. We love them to bits. They pick up all the bandwidth. They save us roughly £400 a month in services. And we'd be stuffed without them because we really couldn't do this show. They pick up everything that we need, dedicated servers. We've got a great relationship with them. I've shot some videos for them. I've gone out for dinner with the guy. He's a fantastic bloke, Andy. And they are, it's on the network. The Windrider's got a link straight away. Debbie-McGee-5-of-spades-2.
Well done, Windrider. And mere seconds later, Bat Winch had the same link in the chat.
I'm going to look at the stats at the end of the month. It's going to spike on that episode. Please support UK2 because they support us. They're absolutely fantastic. And go to our webpage, click on the sponsors link, click on the UK2 logo, come back and get your offer code. You'll save a fortune. They're really, really good. Look after them because they look after us.
Oh, Debbie McGee, Five of Spades, my first ever comment on BTN.
Was it?
Yes.
What did you write?
There it is.
Oh, you're all right, but I'm not looking at it. That's not helping, is it?
There you go. Bit of history.
All right, don't read it out then, Paul. See if I give a shit.
Oh,
I am a recent Bagel Tech convert, and hallelujah, I am healed with this podcast amazingness. Keep this stuff up, and I'll be back for more.
And I'm still here.
And now you're on the panel.
11.
It gave you a taste, and you just keep coming back for more.
Keep coming, see what happens.
Debbie McGee is not a full blonde.
In the day.
Oh, man. She sells her dresses on eBay, you know. No, she does.
She's got a few.
No, because I followed her after that episode. I followed her on Twitter for a while. She puts up her old dresses that she wants to sell on eBay. And if you buy them, they send you a home address. But I've got nothing that fits me, so.
Can I note the titles that are on the homepage right now? Lick OS, iOS Sex Toys, Semen 3PO, Like a Transvestite.
Here, isn't there?
No, you're missing out. You're missing out Lady Charlie's Bendable Television, Randomify, Chiz's Impressions, Tea and a Biscuit, which is actually far worse than it sounds. The Big Mac Show. The Balmer Bra, Power Cut, Ed Gingelar Christmas Baubles, Santa Does Mac, Santa Does Big, The Batwench Bed Mark. You see, you're missing out all... Go forth. You're missing out all the ones that are actually sensible.
What were Asda thinking?
What were Asda thinking? This is a family show. I got no bleeping this week. Can't be that bad. Right. I haven't got a cool thing. Mr. Maccast, start us off.
Was I supposed to have a cool thing?
Yeah, cool thing. You come back to you.
I didn't know you did that on the show. Yeah, come around. I'll get you something.
Jeffrey.
Okay, so I have this great vibrator. Hold on. No, actually.
It's called a massage, love.
This is a follow-up cool thing. This is the Mars rover, Curiosity rover in Lego. It did show up. And so I have to show it off. It's really cool.
It truly is.
Oops, and I just knocked a piece off of it. So that's awesome. So it has an articulated a probe arm, and then the
mast camera.
Yep, the mast camera, which you can move around, and the wheel system. Is articulated just like the system on the actual rover. So when you roll it over something that's an uneven surface, it actually does stay level. And they even did a great job.
You've tested that in the garden, haven't you? Over an anthill or something.
Yeah. Well, actually, it comes with a base with an uneven surface.
Lego.
So you can drive. Yeah. So you can drive it across that. I love the job that they did on the nuclear power plant on the back. And this thing is just really, really cool.
Windrod is just a knockoff.
It's a knockoff. Well, yeah, to be fair, I actually don't have a rocket system to get this all the way to Mars. So it'll just end up sitting on my shelf.
The real thing is frigging huge, isn't it? It's like 6 foot tall.
Yeah, it's like a car, a big car. With wheels sticking off like this. Yeah. It's, yeah. So anyhow, very cool. And it's one of the Lego Cuso kits. And
please note that Jeffrey is an American who doesn't say S on Lego. Good man.
I have been trained.
Who says S on Lego?
Oh, Jesus. All Americans. Well, apart from
not me.
A couple. Legos.
No.
Yeah, well. A lot of people in the United States think that Legos is plural for Lego. So, anyhow, so this Lego Cuso kit, it's a special kit designed by one of the engineers from the Curiosity project.
Brilliant.
And it costs, I believe, $30.
Yeah, it's nothing. But it's actually, they've got a program, haven't they? If you design a Lego kit, they will build it if there's enough people say they want to build it.
It's like a Kickstarter kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's what Cuso is. So when I showed off the DeLorean time machine, when that came in, that was a Cuso project. They have some Minecraft things that they've done and a couple other things. There's one Kuso project that I really hope gets enough points or votes to become an actual shipping product. One of the guys from Pixar designed a Wall-E robot out of Lego, and it just looks fantastic. So I'm really hoping that that one wins enough votes.
Excellent. Wall-E would be great in Lego, you have to say.
Oh, yeah. It looks fantastic.
I mean, the thing is, good with those, if you want to build a Wall-E that's 3 foot tall, then you can do it from just existing Lego blocks. It's dead easy, apart from the fact it's hard. But no, I mean, you can just build it. But if you want to build something that's like a little toy, you have to get custom-made parts, and you have to have them build the kit for it. So, well done. I like that pick, mate.
Have you guys seen the full-size Wall-E? There's a Wall-E Builders Club in the Bay Area.
No.
And there's a couple guys that built full-size, fully operational Wall-Es. It's just amazing.
How do you get a size of Wall-E off the film?
They watched hours and hours of footage, and as a matter of fact, he changes sizes.
Really?
Depending, yeah, they mess with his scale, but basically they used a lot of the reference materials, so they knew they had things like the Rubik's Cube, right? All the things that he kind of holds as reference points, and they just kind of worked from there to figure out the scale.
Excellent.
Custom built parts. I mean, they had the custom fab every part on it.
You know, basically. If you're in a Wall-E club, you've got to get out more.
I want to build one.
We should build a real one. Bring all your Lego up, and I'll bring some over from the UK, and we'll build a Wall-E in the apartment if there's nothing to do.
A joint US UK collaboration.
I think that sounds awesome.
Extra time that we're going to have. I know my pick too, so whenever you're...
Bring a beer and build a Wall-E. That's what we'll do one night. We'll just stay in the apartment. We'll build a Wall-E. We'll bring all our Lego together and we'll drink at the same time. And it won't look like a Wall-E, but who cares? What's your cool thing then, Adam?
I can't hold it up because I'm actually using it at the moment. But with Macworld coming up, and I think there's a newer version. But when I go to Macworld, I'll be doing, and I know we're not supposed to do Apple things, but this is not an Apple thing. I do recording for the show from the show floor, and for years I have used a digital audio recorder called the Zoom H4N.
I have one.
Which is this fabulous digital audio recorder. It's got XLR inputs, dual XLR inputs, quarter-inch inputs for those people who are into audio and stuff like that. It also has stereo microphones built into it, so you can use it for, you know, doing like just room recording with the built-in. I think they have a new version now, the H4NX, but it will do dual track. It'll do super high quality. I think 96-bit, up to 96-bit recordings, records right to an SD card. And if you're a musician, you know, Zoom has been known in the music world for doing all kinds of effects. So you can plug in instruments to these things. It's got all kinds of guitar effects. Has a four-track recorder. You can bounce down tracks. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
It gives out
just a brilliant device.
Power as well.
It gives out phantom power for if you need that for your mics. I use a Sennheiser MD46 dynamic mic when I go out, and works great. And I just love the recorder. It's been my workhorse. As a matter of fact, when I upgraded my operating system and Zoom, and I had a...
the new one's got a tuner on it as well.
sorry. IO14... now I can't even remember the name of the company. I had this audio interface that was a FireWire interface, and the company didn't update the drivers. And so I switched to using the Zoom because you can use it as a USB audio input, go right into GarageBand too. So I use it as my USB audio interface. That's what I have my mic and everything plugged into, which is why I can't show it to you right now. It's a nice little handheld recorder, and it's does a awesome job.
Yeah, it is beautiful. Love it. Yeah, it's got nice... prominent command controls. It's dead easy to use. I use this for work. I take the audio out of my wireless mic system, and when it comes back to the camera off the receiver, I run one of the outputs. The other thing that's nice about this is it gives you twin outputs, so you can push out one from the mic into your audio in and another one into this, and then relay it, and you can also monitor off it as well. So
yeah, they have a whole line. The H4N is kind of their upper one. I think they're around $300, $400
about
that. In that range.
How much they are, Adam?
about that.
Yeah, but they have an H2 and they have an H1 that are smaller, more portable, and a little more affordable. So but the whole line is good.
They also come with a 3/8 socket for tripod as well on the bottom, so you can screw it onto a tripod.
That's I actually use a little monopod stand when I'm there. You'll see it when I'm at Macworld. I have it with me.
My setup is I use one of these with a GorillaPod. Mm-hmm. And then I just wrap it around the legs of my tripod and sit it on the GorillaPod, and it sits out at the angle I want. Superb. Great pick, mate. I'll go on with you on that one. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Sarah, what's your cool thing?
Before I get into that, there was another one. I'm trying to remember what it was. It was the H2 is the one I've come across. It's supposed to be quite good. I actually can't see a price on it at the moment, but that's the one I've heard good things about.
Yeah, I want to say I think the H2 is around 200, maybe 199.
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. But I've actually got it on my wish list at Amazon. So
yeah, there you just have to use I think it only has 1/8 inch in, so you have to use an adapter if you want to hook up an XLR. And I don't think you can get the Phantom power, but
yeah. But for remote recording, it's ideal, isn't it?
They're great. I know a lot of people who have them and absolutely love them.
Mm. Excellent.
Right. Okay, my cool thingy is it's actually something I've done before, but I've got a specific reason for picking it. It's an app for Android called the ES File Explorer File Manager, but that's not the major reason for picking it. Recently, I discovered that there's KitKat has been released not too long ago as the new version of Android, and one of the things apparently that it enables airtime providers to do is to disable the ability to use your phone as a hotspot device. And this is one of the reasons that Google have actually used it to airtime providers to actually get it out onto devices as quickly as possible. That's the source, the carrot they've given them. But this built into ES File Explorer, it apparently is a hotspot application that allows you to get around that. So as KitKat starts to come out, watch out for the fact that this feature may get disabled. And this is a way to get around it, which is one of the reasons I'm keeping it on my phone.
It's in the Google Store and it's called
ES File Explorer File Manager. I've put a link into the chat. I have used it before, but this is before I realized, before I found out about this particular issue about KitKat. It's one of the reasons I'm making sure I keep it on my phone. I've got KitKat on my tablet, but not on my phone. But apparently, it's something you should look out for, because you get the OTA upgrade to KitKat on your phone, as it gets pushed out, be aware that your hotspot may disappear. So this is a way to get around that issue.
Cool.
Don't you love the carriers? They're always looking out for their customers.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why, I don't know, but I believe that the reason why Google put it in was to actually help convince the airtime providers to actually get KitKat out as quick as possible. Because as we know, they tend to fill stuff up with junk, and the manufacturers do as well. And this is a way to try and get them to get them out quicker than they normally would do.
It's a good one. I mean, they would love that.
Very good. Now, apparently as well, hot off the press, we've found yet more Dracula apps. Chat room has already decided, and Batwinch has found it. She gets full credit for this. Calculator is a Dracula app as well. Dracula app. No reflection whatsoever, and it's as deep as all the rest. So that throws Adam's theory. So there you go. The Dracula apps with no reflection. There you go. FaceTime and calculator. If you've got a Dracula app, send it to us and we'll publish it.
All of mine are Dracula apps because I run my dock on the side.
Yeah.
Same for me.
Oh, you pussies.
Right.
You gotta find the Dracula apps. There we go.
So what happened to this being a Mac-free show then?
No, it's if you've got a reflection in Windows you can show, then that's fair enough as well. We'll put that on. or even Linux, if they do such a thing. Waiters, Paul, what's your cool thing?
Well, it may be covered on the show before, or maybe well-known by Windows users, but like I say, I'm toying with an 8.1 this week, but the one thing that really makes it more bearable is Classic Shell. For those who don't know what it is, it's basically it's the start menu. It's back. In 8.1, they've brought the start button back, but all the start button does is take you back to the Metro interface. Classic Shell, you install it, actually brings back the proper Windows start menu. So you can actually put all your favorite apps in there, all your documents. It's actually more customizable than the start menu was in Windows 7. But if you're really kind of fed up with the Metro interface and you really just want to use the desktop and use it like a Windows 7 machine, Classic App is a free app and it's absolutely amazing. And I think weekly they have 50,000 odd downloads of it. So obviously people are crying out for it. So I think it's something that Microsoft really needs to kind of take heedance to and actually put that start menu back. But for now, this is a great replacement.
That'll do. It's good enough. Don't worry, mate. Well done. Good pick. Is it free?
Yeah, absolutely free.
Just get it. There you go. My cool thing, I've had it all week on test to play with it, is the Brino time-lapse camera. There you go. And if you didn't see it, I set it out in the garden overnight, and I shot a movie which was rather good. I was chuffed with it, and it's got fantastic settings on it. The only balls out with this is you've got to focus it manually. So if you've got crap eyesight, it doesn't help. I just took my password in here. I should be able to show you the bugger. Bugger. And trying to be slick, it just doesn't want to play. But it's £199.
Whoa.
Yeah. So 200 quid. I think that's probably about $800 but at the moment. But no, I think you can get these a lot cheaper. I think they're only about $299. I think they're $299 in the States. But they are time-lapse cameras. The lens here on the top moves, so you can go up and down with it. It's got.
Yeah, you have to set that. You set that before you. Is it remote controllable or
no? You set it manually, and there you go. It's got a really low quality screen on the back, so when you're trying to focus, it's a bit of a pain in the ass. But it's actually fairly good on the focus once you get it going. It's fairly verbose commands and stuff. You can stick SD cards in up to 32 gig, and you can vary your time lapse images up to 10 minutes.
Will it let you? Will it let you set a pan? And so there's no motor on that at all. It's purely mechanical. No, so you can't do kind of like a pan as you time lapse.
You can buy egg timer like applications that will do a full rotation in 360 degree in an hour.
But sure.
If you're doing the time lapses that this thing's built for, which is like overnight and longer, then that's going to be a pain in the ass.
You can't set it up to automatically do like a vertical pan, because I notice it goes up and down.
Right? No, you can't.
That would be cool.
I'll find one there. But I've got... I'm just having a look. I've disappeared into the back of the office. Here we go.
Little lazy Susan egg timer things, right?
Well, you can get an egg timer mechanism and just split it apart, and that'll work on any new GoPro or anything like that. But one of the things that I found off the shelf, which is good, because all egg timers work for an hour, and that's it. It's your lot. Well, some of the places I go, things happen over 2 or 3 hours, so I actually want to take it a bit longer. And what I found was garden hose timers. There's chroma key on the screen, which is why this is looking like it's transparent, because it's green. But basically, that will wind up to 2 hours for a complete rotation, so they're twice as long. And the only problem you get is because egg timer mechanisms are really low quality and very, very cheap and made in China, they do stick halfway through. So you will find them just sort of occasionally they'll stop and then they'll jerk on again. So you have to sit and post edit if you're going to do that kind of thing. But anyway, getting back to the Brino thing, really, really good. Here's the best bit. You can stick a 32 gig card, and if you put in like a 2 minute time lapse on that, you can leave this thing up for a very long period of time. You go, okay, but you're going to have to power that, aren't you? Nope. 4 AA batteries powers this camera for 2.5 months.
Wow.
Amazing.
Wow.
So that is long-term time-lapse. You can film projects with this thing, which is why I bought it to try and do. It only gives you 720p video. You've got to manually focus, so it's not particularly huge and brilliant. But 2.5 months on 4 AA batteries, I think it's pretty impressive. And here's the best bit. You can get a hold of the lens, and you say, all right, I don't want the wide-angle lens that's on it, so you take it off. And they do a set of replacement lenses, and this one is the 17 to 40 millimeter adjustable lens, and that goes on, And then you can sit and focus that, and you can zoom in and out on the telephoto on it, and away you go. You're in. That's about £110 for the extra lens, so it's not perfectly cheap, but £200. I thought it was well worth it, and the results are excellent. I'm going to show you that video now because I've remembered to do it. So here we go. Oh no, it won't let me do it. It's saying I can't put it. No, it won't let me put it on. Ah well, what do I know? I've no idea why it won't let me do it when it did it before. There we go. That's it. No, I'm not reading that out, Mark. We'll be back again next week as normal, so stick around and you'll enjoy it. Thursday night I should be able to do the show. I'm in Taunton. If you're in Taunton next week, I'll have a beer. I had a beer with Dazza Westlake, fantastic bloke, the other week. Well done, mate. Had a great time. Changed the way I will now keyword all our pictures as well because of you, mate. Where can we get a hold of you, Adam?
You can find me over at the MacCast, over at MacCast.com, MacCast on iTunes, also MacCast on Twitter, Google+, and the MacCast on Facebook.
And if you're a Mac user, it's a seminal Mac podcast. You're right out there with the originals, aren't you?
10 years.
10 years you've been doing it.
Oh, 10 years.
Greeny's been doing it 10 years, but he's only done 25 episodes.
I think I'm 400 and some odd, plus another 170 on the member show. So Jesus. Well over 500, approaching 600 shows.
Good lad. Well done, mate.
Wow.
I can beat you on numbers because I did the Daily Show for three and a bit years. So
yeah.
But
those will rack up really fast.
They will, yeah. But they were only 5 minutes long, so I don't.
Yeah,
really
I'm almost to 475 on the main show. Just did 473. So
good, man. Yours is one of the first Mac shows I ever listened to, mate. So
cool.
Honored to have you on here. Jeffrey G. Gamet, how the devil are you, mate? Where can we get a hold of you?
Well, you can find me at Mac Observer, which is macobserver.com, and on Twitter and app.net, J. Gamet, both places, and on a bunch of podcasts like Apple Context Machine. We have Communicators, which I do with Adam. Here on the big show, sometimes I do the Mac show. I get around the podcast circuit, so I'm easy to find. And then Fresh Brewed Tales, that's where I talk about the ridiculous things that I see happen in coffee shops.
Batwench wants to know if there's an attachment connected to my telescope. Not that I know of, but that's a great question. Hold on, sorry. That's where you can get Jeff. Sarah, where are you, Mrs.?
Yeah, best place to get me is on Twitter, on the Twitters or Google Plus when it's available, at Sarah Jane UK.
Thank you, mate. And Paul, where are you, mate?
At Paulum's on Twitter, and you may think we've been a bit quiet at BritishTechNetwork.com, but we're really excited about things that are coming up very, very soon.
Yeah, we're going to get a complete change, aren't we?
It's going to be amazing.
Wholesale, and it is slick. It's slick as snot, and you're the man that started it.
Yeah, but there's other stuff coming. Different reviews and things like that. I'm really excited.
It's going to look fantastic. Thank you for starting that off, mate. And thank you to Sarah and Paul Wheatley for helping you finish it, because it was a hell of a charge.
Yes, thank you so much.
That's okay.
Over my head.
No. You did a great job, mate. We'll be back again next week. I'm Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. See you then. Thanks for listening.